You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
3, 2, 1, go. Hello and welcome back to the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast. And week on week, I keep, you know, having a little think before we record these podcasts of what I'm going to say in the introduction. But I'm sure you can understand week on week, it just feels a little bit harder, a little bit more difficult to find the words exactly on what to say and explain just what on earth has happened in the last week since we were last with you. But look, I appreciate once again everyone tuning in and listening. Delighted to say we have got Jack. We have got Rick. Jordan's going to join us quite soon, actually. And delighted to say we're joined by BBC Leicester's well-known Owen Palmer-Atkin as well. So very much looking forward to, well, I say that, I'm looking forward to having a chat with the lads. But of course, you know, the topic of today's podcast isn't a great one. Losing my favourite game, the lyrics there of that song to intro to get things going today, which was, I'm not sure how deliberately or accidentally played at halftime last night at the King Power Stadium. But look, it was a 3-0 defeat to Liverpool. And for me, and I think for probably pretty much everyone, just about seals Leicester's relegation to the Championship. Of course, it's not completely over, but to say it's bleak, I think is a fair assessment. But look, we're going to go straight to Owen this evening and say hello to you. Mate, thanks for coming on to the podcast. Very much appreciate it. How are you? Are you all right?
thanks for having me. You know what? Yes, I'm fine, other than the football. I think that's probably everyone's initial response, isn't it? That it's just feels like it's engulfing your whole life at the minute. And as you rightly say, it's bleak. But hopefully this will act as a bit of therapy maybe for the next hour or so.
Yeah, well, apparently, you know, that does help for lots of people who do listen to this. That's what we're told. I'll ask you about that because, you know, for you and I working in the media, I have to say, I've said this before, that when I do the podcasts and kind of during the week when I'm not at work, I do find it particularly draining, you know, when Leicester are playing like they are, because I'm having to talk about it all day at work. And then when you come to do these podcasts, you obviously want to do it because I know that people appreciate it. But also sometimes I'm thinking, God, done this all day. I don't want to do it anymore. What is it like for you, like generally, when you're commentating on these games and you're going along to the press conferences, you know, as a Leicester fan, what you are when you can always see what's happening in front of you, but it's so difficult to I don't know how difficult it is for you to remain professional. I'm sure actually a lot easier for you than it is probably for some of us lads. But do you know what I mean? How difficult is that when you can see what's happening? And it must be so painful for you, but you've got to keep doing it day in, day out.
Yeah, no, it is painful. I was speaking to someone at the game last night and I was saying, look, that yes, my job is following Leicester up and down the country and attending the press conferences and doing all of that. But, you know, at my heart, I'm a Leicester fan, and it pains me to see what's happening this season. And I mean, having your everyday life completely surrounded by Leicester City is not fun at the moment, if I'm honest. You know, you wake up on a Monday and you're in at work and you're talking about the game, and then you're back in the next day and you're talking about the game and you're looking forward to the next game, and then you're planning all these different things to kind of do and guess for the program, looking at when the press conferences are, knowing that you're speaking to Dean Smith, the next game coming, and it's just like a continuous cycle. And it's, you know, when it's like this, it's very tiring. But when Leicester had won, you know, six in a row or whatever it was just before the World Cup, it's great and you feel like you could do it every week. And it is difficult, I have to admit. And I think we all feel a bit tired, really, at the end of this season. It feels like it's been a long season. And just the fact that it's only two games away from finishing, one way or another, I think it's a bit of a relief, really.
Yeah, no, personally, I won't lie. I'm ready for it all to be over. I know that's quite a sad thing to say, and some people may get annoyed by me saying that, but that is generally how I feel. Look, Owen, we're so used to hearing you on BBC Radio Leicester, and what a wonderful and professional job that you do. Now, of course, here on this podcast, we have the luxury of not being wonderfully professional, and like to kind of really let off some steam at times. And are we going to have some potty mouth Palmer Atkin today? Are we going to have some swear words, or are we going to remain well, professional?
Well,
You're allowed to.
I mean, I'll let the emotions flow, and whether I deviate down a Ric Flair path or a Jake Watson path, we'll have to wait and see.
Hey, don't you dare put me in the same category as Ric Flair. Rick, good evening, mate. How are you? You good?
No, I'm not good, mate. I've got arsehole Sunday night. Same again yesterday. I was in London with work. So I obviously went to the stag to watch that debacle last night and ended up drinking again. And as I said to you on the text, I've had three kebabs in two nights, which is just disgusting. I've had more kebabs than there's been days. I feel like I've been bitten by a pig. but the football, it just, it goes from one extreme to the other, doesn't it? No, that's the wrong term. It's continuously shit. I've been reminiscing about, you know, it's been 15 years or whatever since we last got relegated. And I do feel like every single football fan should face relegation at some point, because it's a great leveller to bring you back down to earth and make you realise how much football means to you, because it's horrible. But, you know, I remember as a kid, I bricked a wasp's nest and I must have got stung about 25 times all up my shorts and my undercrackers. It was horrible. I cried for about a week. And yet, last night, I reckon I enjoyed that more, getting stung, than watching that last night, because it was just hideous. First 15 minutes, ooh, you know, a bit of pressing, bit of impetus, and then we just fell apart. And our ability to play the opposition onside all the while, whether it's Castagna, who's just a masterclass at doing it. Johnny Evans did the splits to play Curtis Jones on that second one. Defy science. Just done with it. As you say, get the season done and pass me some form of narcotics or something to numb the pain.
Oh, dear, mate. Wow. And I have to know what, I've been meaning to actually look at the numbers in terms of, you talk about relegation, you know, in the years that I've been on this planet, how many relegations I've seen, how many promotions and then trophies, because, you know, every fan will probably say it, that there's kind of nothing quite like supporting their team. But I know Jordan said it, that he thinks pound for pound we must be, for entertainment or in terms of, you know, talking points, the most entertaining football team in the country. We certainly can't be far off. We never just have a normal season. Jack, how are you, mate? And have you got them numbers? Roughly?
Yeah, I think it's five times I've seen us get relegated. Well, I'm including this one, I think.
Yeah.
So you've got League One, and then you've got three Premier League relegation, and then this will be the fourth. So,
okay.
My dad was telling me he's seen us eight or nine times or something. So it happens, doesn't it? It does. Yeah. But anyway, to go back to your question, I'm not great, mate. I obviously went to the game last night. I don't know whether I'm ashamed to admit this or not. I left at half time, which I've never done. But I was just like, I can't deal with this. And I gave you stick earlier in the season. Hilariously, as I was trying to get out, so I step out the gate. The woman behind me goes, "Oh, you do realize you can't come back in if you leave now?" I was like, "I know. What are you trying to do? Don't let me back in." And today, I've had to spend my entire day in West Bridgeford. So it was a hugely triggering experience for me having to be in Nottingham today, because you know how much I love being the city of my birth. So, no, it's not been good. Although I have to say, just, you know, 5 minutes with Rick Blair and, you know, you realise that someone has gone through more agony than you have. So it's therapy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I mean, it's funny you bring up me leaving Spurs after, I think it was actually 25 minutes.
Yeah, because we'd gone 2-0 down and then I think we went back to 2-2. Oh, no.
It was 2-0. And then I thought, I'm going to go back in the concourse and have a pint, because I wasn't obviously enjoying it. And then as I'm walking down back in to get a pint, I hear a cheer. So it's gone... No, it was 2-1, sorry. So as I'm walking back to the concourse...
Yeah, Yuri scored early, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going back down to the concourse to have a pint. I hear a cheer. So Spurs have scored 3-1. I'm thinking, you know, by this stage of the season, we've been battered every week. You know how this is ending already. So I think I'm going to have my pint and then make a decision on what I want to do. So I have my pint and then think, you know what? Yeah, it was my mate's birthday. He was in London, already at the pub, kind of waiting for me, thinking, you know what? I'm just going to go. So as I then walked out of the stadium... Leicester scored, and I didn't realise that actually made it 2-2, because I didn't realise that third one had been disallowed and it was only 2-1, and I tried to get back into the stadium but they wouldn't let me back into the stadium. But of course, in my mind, I was justified by my decision, the fact that we did go on and lose 6-2. And it is interesting, because at the time I tweeted saying that I'd done it, and that, you know, and loads of the Leicester fans actually had done the same. I wasn't the only one. And loads were in the concourse at the time drinking pints, and we were all saying the same thing, that they down tools, they didn't want to play for the manager anymore, they weren't trying, and it was awful to watch. And it was at that point, wasn't it, where we all thought that Brendan was going to lose his job. And ultimately, he didn't. And we had obviously a number of these moments over the course of the season where we thought something was going to happen, and it never quite did. But now, and in hindsight, as we sit here in the situation that we're now in terms of relegation all but sealed, for me, that was the moment. And I now feel very comfortable with the fact that I said that at the time. And I wish I hadn't actually deleted the tweet saying so, because I kind of bottled it a little bit.
Because
the performance actually wasn't that bad, was it, on the day? I think we were incredibly remarkable to say unlucky to lose 6-2. But anyway, that was the moment, wasn't it, now in hindsight, where the club should have acted and didn't. So, yeah, I mean, Owen, coming back to you, mate, in terms of the season itself and kind of just trying to pick it apart, you know, did you feel similar in terms of the reason why we're at where we are is because of a lack of action from the top of the club, in terms of, you know, whether it be a lack of action in the summer in terms of signings that they made? And then as the season then started, as I just kind of alluded to, that terrible start where you feel like ordinarily at any other club that the manager would have lost his job, but Brendan didn't. And it, for me, it just feels that this could have all been avoided if they'd just done stuff 10 months ago, 12 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think because that Spurs game, if I remember rightly, came just before an international break. And I remember being on the kind of overground tube leaving the stadium with Pipes and Jack, and we were kind of discussing how badly it had gone in the opening couple of months of the season, and whether the fact that there was an international break, whether this may or may not be the time that the club decide to move things along. But I think if you look at the games that followed that, and that win over Forest, and then the results that kind of came just after the international break, actually, heading into the World Cup break, Leicester are in a really good position. And I think Danny Ward was level for the Golden Glove at that stage as well, which at this stage just feels absolutely ridiculous when we're all talking about how bad Leicester have been defensively. But in that stage, you know, that they were okay, and they were sitting in what we knew by that stage was going to be a difficult season. They were sat in a relatively comfortable position. And then it's when they come back after the World Cup break and the form has fell off a cliff again, that for me was a very, very big warning sign that Leicester were gonna struggle and that they needed to pick up one or two wins very quickly to rejig that form. They just didn't. And you kind of meander through January without any new signings and eventually get Christiansen, Suter and Tete through the door. And I think when we look back on this at the end of the season, we'll be able to pick out big moments throughout the campaign where there were missed opportunities. And I was talking on the podcast that we do at Radio Leicester the other day, and I think one of those huge opportunities that were missed were those back-to-back games against Bournemouth and Aston Villa. Yeah. At home, with Brendan Rodgers just leaving the club, and they pick up no points from those two games. They give relegation rivals a way out of that nine-team league that had formed at the bottom of the table, and they leave themselves in a mess. And then just before that, you've got the Palace game, where Brendan obviously left the day after. And that was off the back of an international break. And if the only cause for the manager to be moved on or by mutual consent was the fact that they dropped into the relegation zone, then that feels like a strange bit of criteria for me, because it was a nine-team league and anyone could. And I really hope it's not the case, because we all talk about how, you know, Leicester have been the blueprint for so many clubs. And I think Brighton have followed that blueprint, gone in a slightly different way, and now are reaping the rewards for it. But there is an element of the club feeling like the will be fine mindset. And it seems to have sunk all the way through. And now they find themselves in a really dire position where looks like they're going to get relegated and could lose two-thirds of their annual income, which will leave the club in a financial battle, as well as a battle to get back in the Premier League. So I think there's been so many massive moments in the game, in the whole of the season, that have pointed towards this in one way or another. And it only feels like now the dog's barking. now that even he's getting angry at this. They're realizing it.
Yeah. Rick, on last night, let's talk about Liverpool and that, I suppose, lack of performance, really, wasn't it? I mean, fortunately, I suppose, I'd very much resigned myself to relegation before last night, and I didn't expect to get anything from that game. But you'd like to think that the players wouldn't quite be thinking that same way. I thought the performance last night against Liverpool was absolutely dreadful. I really do think it was. And I can completely understand why Jack left what he did. And I could see, I was just watching from home last night, but the stadium was pretty much empty with 20 or so minutes to go last night, because the players were giving nothing to the fans to suggest or really give any reason to stay there and get behind them. The moment that Leicester conceded last night to go 1-0 behind, The team just once again capitulated. I think it's now 21 games without a clean sheet. No team in Europe has got a record as bad as that. I think in the last 19 games, Leicester have gone behind first in 18 of those. I mean, we can talk for hours, mate, and I can start going through some of the players as well. But I mean, I just thought that the lack of effort, desire, intensity, and any real kind of showing from a team that, you know, actually at 2-0 down, you're fighting for your lives. You're only 2 points adrift of safety. That, to me, didn't look like a team fighting for their lives whatsoever.
I totally agree. I mean, I think I've said this before. There's no manual for the way that clubs deal with a relegation battle and ultimately succumb. But we are definitely not doing what you would expect a team to be in a relegation battle. You want to see some fight, don't you? And we've got none whatsoever. We're, you know, it's not even with one arm tied behind our back trying to fight. It's like both arms, legs, head inserted up our own Harris's. We're just completely gone. I mean, last night's performance, I'm beyond angry. I mean, I don't want to trivialise death, but this very much feels like you're witnessing a loved one who's about to die and the cause of death's a stubbed toe. you know, this could have been prevented a long time ago. And yet it's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. There's nothing. Last night's performance. I mean, Johnny Evans, what was that? Mm. What was that? I'd rather him have just pretended he got another ailment or, you know.
Can we talk about his interview after the game as well?
Yeah, well,
I didn't hear it. What did he say?
If they basically they put that same level of effort in for the next two games, well, basically they're going to put in the same level of effort for the next two games. That's all they can do.
Well, I mean, he's right, because that will be the level of effort they put in, because we've seen scant evidence of anything different. But you don't say that.
No, but he thinks that that was that them putting an effort, Rick. He hasn't said that to be provocative. He generally thinks that they tried and they thought that they showed the fans that they cared last night. That's what they thought they did.
I mean, he just looked dazed the whole evening. He was just sort of like waddling about.
This is probably the one insight on the game I can give. When Madison put a free kick over early doors and he sort of stretched for it, and then he sort of jogged back to the halfway line. I was like, worried about his hamstring, and he was stretching it. He's broken. He's completely broken. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll probably give him a 5-year contract when we're in the championship to lead us back up, but he is done, isn't he?
Yeah, we've spoken about Johnny Evans, though, previously, that, you know, it is quite bizarre that he is the club captain. It is, because you haven't felt like we've had a club captain all of this season. Now, I know he's been injured, but you just can't help but feel, if you think of times gone by with previous teams and previous club captains, say, for instance, if Kasper Schmeichel was still at the club and he was out injured, do you not think over the course of the last 6 months you would have heard and seen more of Kasper Schmeichel than what you've seen of Johnny Evans? There's not a doubt in my mind you would have seen that. It just seems that Johnny Evans is the club captain because he's the most senior professional at the football club. And that's kind of the start and end of his leadership qualities. I mean, there's no doubt at one point he was an outstanding central defender, and I won't take that away from him. But you see so little from him. And, you know, physically, with all the injuries that he has had, I'm amazed that he played last night. I'm amazed that we've seen him play again. Because, you never really quite know, but you've got a fairly decent indication. If he hasn't played for all that time, just to throw him in and start a game against Liverpool is a huge ask to ask of somebody whose body clearly isn't really kind of up to it anymore. And, you know, when you've got Harry Suter sat there on the bench, and I know we'll probably talk about that very, very shortly. You've got Wout Fez, who for me has been dreadful for the last couple of games. The moment I saw that starting lineup yesterday against Liverpool, I just thought, there's not a chance in hell we're getting a clean sheet here. And knowing full well that, you know, against a team like Liverpool who are playing as well as what they are right now, you just felt completely, you know, bereft of, I mean, whatever confidence you may have had anyway. It just, for me, Jack, it disappears the moment I saw that starting lineup last night.
It didn't look a very good starting lineup, did it? But I mean, to be fair to Smith, the one time he's played a starting lineup that we've all gone, what on earth is he doing? We won. So I think Rick said before the game, I want him to do a completely chaotic lineup. I mean, for me, in the first half, it almost looked like we were playing six defenders and four attackers. That we didn't look like we had a midfield, just the gap between the two of them. And it didn't look very coherent tactically. And for me, I don't want to go back to Brendan. Everyone knows that I'm a Brendan fan. But at least when we watched the Brendan team, we had a coherent plan and it looked like we were trying to play some kind of football. Whereas I don't know what we're trying to do in terms of a plan currently, and it was horrible to watch, hence why I left.
Well, I think if just building on that, Jack, I think there's no doubting that tactically, you know, Brendan was an astute coach and tactically thought very deeply about the game. I mean, he was very interested in press conference, particularly in the in the first maybe two or three seasons when you were kind of understanding the tactical side of it and what he wanted his game plan to be. And we didn't always see it, but he stuck by the fact that that's what he wanted. And sometimes he didn't have the players or whatever reasons it was, but he knew how he wanted his side to play and was pretty open about that in the media. But we don't seem to get that as much from Dean Smith other than him wanting to not play on the counter-attack in home games. And Pipes talked about this last night during commentary. He asked, you know, what is the kind of style? What is the kind of game plan here? Because he was saying that he couldn't see it.
Yeah. I couldn't see it at all. And for me, I watched... So you watch Forest play and their style, same with Everton, their style is turgid, but at least they have a game plan, right? They have a long throw. They're going to get balls in the box. Like, it's really obvious what they're trying to do. I've got no idea what he's trying to do at the moment. He seems to want to pick quite a lot of tall players, but none of them are very good at heading. And it's not as if we've got people that cross the ball either. So it doesn't make any sense to me. You back with us, Jake? No.
Yes, I am. Sorry. I just thought I'd just let Owen, you know, present a lot better than me.
Seamless.
Yeah, sorry, I'm having a few technical problems, but thank you for carrying on without me. Jordan has now joined us. Jordan, whereabouts are you, mate?
I'm currently outside Holmes Park, mate. It's half time in the Senior Cup final. Ashby Ivanhoe 1, Lutworth Athletic 0. You can see from my jumper in the garish green.
Are you Up playing?
No. it's our first team are playing.
Your hair looks very slick.
It does.
Yeah, Slick Rick.
Look like the games are out of Shameless.
Yeah, it does.
You said I was good looking 24 hours ago.
Hey, you still are, mate.
but mate, look, thanks for joining us. This is like a Radio Leicester, is it? A live update from some local sport. I mean, what is the score, mate?
Yeah, we're losing 1-0, keeper error, which is a bit contentious because the manager's dropped the normal keeper. I don't actually know who our keeper is. And the lads had a shot.
Is it Danny Ward?
It's not Danny Ward.
it'd be more than 1-0 if it was.
I think Danny Ward would have struggled to save it as well. But apparently Ashby are going for a treble. They won the... No, that's not true. They got promoted, won the League Cup, and they're going for the Senior Cup now. So they've had a good season, but we've not created enough. There's still 45 to go, so stay positive.
How long can you join us for, by the way? Is this a flying visit?
As long as you want, mate. I'm here for a good time, not a long time, as Rick normally says.
All right then, mate. Well, look, we've not got your thoughts then of Liverpool last night. Go for it. What did you think of that? Yeah, exactly. That's the noise, isn't it?
In terms of the actual performance, I thought we started okay. I wouldn't go as far to say we started quite well because I can't really remember us creating an awful lot. But after 20 minutes, we just reverted to type and just sat off, gave them a lot of the ball. I think it says all you need to know that Curtis Jones has got two. I mean, he's never been a player, especially not for Liverpool anyway. The first goal, I'm sure you've been through it, is just playground stuff. I don't know why Wout Fez is facing the wrong way. He's facing his own goal when he's trying to head it. It's just crazy. The second goal, I have to admit, I was in the concourse and I've got a shout out Connor who let me know it was 2-0 because I was saying for about 10 minutes to him, I said, if we can keep it 1-0, mate, we're in the game. And he goes, you do know it's 2-0, don't you? I later found out that the replay they initially showed was the wrong one, and then they showed a different one, and it was onside, and that just killed the game. And then I think Salah could have made it 3, couldn't he? Second half, we were just a disgrace to the shirt, to be honest. You know, you look at teams down there that are fighting for their lives. Leeds showed it against Newcastle. Jack covered it briefly there while I was on, but Everton and Forest are fighting for their lives. And as Rob Tenner mentioned his article earlier this morning, there's a sign above the tunnel that says Foxes never quit, and it couldn't be more ironic because other than Vardy, who we wouldn't shift anyway on those wages and his age, I don't think he'd particularly want to go, but the rest of them can go, and good riddance to them, because I don't remember a Leicester City team in my lifetime, even the Peter Taylor teams that were the Peter Taylor team that was poor, you know, team that went down to League One under Holloway. I've never seen a group of players down tools in this manner. They don't care about the shirt. They don't care about the club. All they're bothered about is where the next pay packet's coming from. And the sad reality of football is they know that they could well be playing in European competition next season. And it really is sickening. So I'm on board with the fact that we're going down, cleanse the club from top to bottom, particularly the playing staff, and start again. I thought it was a wretched performance. And again, I've gone from saying, I don't think we're going to get a point now. I don't think we're going to score. It didn't even look like scoring. And that was the one thing I was holding on to for 30 games, or maybe, you know, 25, 30 games, that we create enough chances to score. And we don't anymore. We're just utter fodder.
Yeah, no, we are. And Rick, I actually tweeted this earlier about Leicester's imminent relegation, because we've kind of alluded to the fact that we've seen this before in terms of relegation, but this time it does feel different because, you know, you talk about Peter Taylor, like the Mickey Adams team. I mean, the reality was we were where we were because that's how good the squad was. This squad is where it's at because of some serious mismanagement at pretty much every level of this football club. And I think if you look at years gone by when a big team has been relegated, and I'm thinking, and correct me if I'm missing anybody out here, the Leeds team, the Aston Villa side, and Newcastle, I think probably the three biggest to have gone down. I think that this is the biggest shock, or the kind of the biggest story out of all of them, because this team, it's roughly, you're never quite sure because you haven't got the latest accounts, whether it's seventh or eighth highest wage bill in the Premier League. You know, it's an almost identical squad to the one that won the FA Cup just a couple of years ago. You know, this is a Premier League winning team from seven seasons ago, you know, filled top to bottom with international footballers. I mean, you can even talk about Brendan Rodgers at the start of the season, one of the highest paid managers in the league. For this team to have got relegated is a massive story. And I find it almost bizarre that the media, it's only really now they're talking about it. And I'm talking about national media. It feels that, you know, we spent months of them telling us that we're going to be okay. And now suddenly it's like, oh, you're gone, you're down. It's like, yeah, did you miss that middle bit where everyone was telling you that we're banging trouble? You know, that Newcastle team was in trouble for a couple of seasons and it was kind of coming. Leeds had a points deduction and administration. So again, it wasn't a huge surprise. And Villa had flirted down there for a couple of seasons. This Leicester team, since it's been back in the Premier League other than that first season, has not been anywhere near relegation and shouldn't be anywhere near relegation. This is the biggest mismanagement and biggest shock as far as relegation goes, in my mind, in Premier League history.
Absolutely. I mean, what you just said there, usually teams that go down, they've started to struggle and manage to stay up for a year at least, maybe a few more. Look at Everton. If they drop this season or next season, you wouldn't be surprised. But at least they've had a couple of cracks at you know, showing some fight and staying up. We've just gone from what we classed as what felt like a decline of sorts last season, even though we did have a good run towards the end of the season and got eighth. Quite easily could have been 14th, 15th last season if we hadn't done, because it was quite tight. But, you know, three or four wins out of the last five, it still felt a bit of a scrappy season up and down. But to go from eighth and fifth two seasons before that, okay, there's been significant weaknesses in losing certain players, but it is still largely the same squad. And I know it's hard to agree that what we're witnessing here, that squad is good enough to stay up, but it is. It's just hard to accept that. And so this is, it's just horrible. I can't remember the point I was going to make there about, I mean, West Ham, another club that they went down on 42 points or something. But yeah, where do you even begin on where it's gone wrong? There's so many things. I think Jack's probably got a point here he wants to come in on.
It just went wrong in the summer, right? Because whatever we were doing didn't work. And I'm still speechless that we went into the summer with a manager saying one thing about needing new players, which he was absolutely bang on right about. Yet we did absolutely nothing. Like, the approach in the summer was beyond naive. And that's what's killed us, because I've said this a few times, momentum in football, once you lose it, it's really, really hard. You've lost the manager, you've lost half the players because the manager decided to throw most of the players under the bus at the same time. You've not got any new players to bring in. And then one of your best players tries to leave. The other one's probably Madison was probably flirting with bigger clubs as well. So you've lost half of them. And then you let your captain go. And as someone said to me, Danny Ward will be fine. I mean, there's a real theme about people saying things will be fine and them not being fine. But yeah. you can't have a summer like this. And it frustrates me so much because we were all saying it at the time. And if it was about money, well, you've just lost way more money than whatever money you saved in the summer. And you'll lose way more because half your players are leaving on freeze. Madison, will we get more than 40 million for him now? Barnes, will we get more than 30 million for him now? Probably would have got 60 for them both if we were still in the Prem. And, yeah. You know, Ndidi, shadow of a player. I mean, I joked last night that my dog is now named after Boris Johnson's son, which says everything you need to know about that. That summer killed us. And Brendan was telling people at the time, now, we're going over old ground, but you either sack the manager at that point or you go and sign a load of new players. And then you play catch up. And then you go into January and you sign two players in the last week, none of whom are any good. Like, that's where it's killed us. It's not about the manager. And the fact that Smith's come in and he's saying in an interview, what did he say? What were his words? It was like, it'll be a real achievement if I keep this squad of players up. Don't say that in public.
Yeah. Owen, having spoken to Dean, obviously a fair amount now, you've got to know him probably fairly well. Was it? We had six games now. When he first came in, and I'm not going to be too critical of Dean Smith here, because I think it's quite clear he inherited a sinking ship. And for people who are unawares of this, I've got lots of stats today, that any Premier League club who's made a managerial change after the month of March, you know, when they were in a relegation battle, no team has ever survived. You know, history suggests that if you're leaving it that late, the damage is already done. And, you know, I do like Dean. I think there's lots to like about him. But I do think that now over the course of the six games, he's been found tactically wanting. And I thought it was quite interesting hearing him before the Liverpool game, that bouncy, positive guy. It almost like we kind of drummed out that positivity out of him. And he was already talking about, as Jack mentions, you know, if I manage to keep Leicester up, it's like, come on, Dean, do you know what I mean? It just seemed like there was a little change in the way he was talking ahead of that Liverpool game, probably because of what he witnessed against Fulham. What's it been like speaking to him, and what do you make of what he said, and maybe how he's changed over the course of the couple of months he's been here?
Firstly, what I will say is, just backing up what you guys were saying about the relegation battle, this would be the most expensive, most costly side to ever be relegated, with the highest ever wage bill to ever be relegated as well, which just shows you the levels that they're working with. And you're quite right to put your hand on your forehead, Jake, and pull back that beautiful hair in the frustration, because it is. But I think, you know, Dean Smith was brought in, and we all knew at the time what his qualities were and what this team needed. And what this team needed wasn't, you know, to be coached and to be improved in sort of technical aspects. They just needed their confidence and their belief being picked back up. And that if they were able to do that, I mean, you look at the systems used by Brendan and Dean Smith, they're very, very similar. The 4-3-3, the 4-2-3-1. And what you got from Dean Smith in the press conferences when we had the chance to sit down with him was the fact that he wanted for him, Craig Shakespeare, John Terry to come in and really boost the belief. And he said that himself. I just think that when you, like you say, Jake, you know, when you're making a change that late with eight games to play was when Dean Smith walked through the door. And yes, there were winnable games in there. But if you can't get that team working, running, showing the character, showing that desire for games like Leeds away and for games like Everton at home, where, you know, they could have won those games. They had the quality to win those games, particularly Everton, and then just failed to show up for large majorities of it. You wonder where that motivation is going to come. And then the players look round and they think, well, and as you've already alluded to, and as lots of people will allude to as well, that the contract situation, you know, we can only speculate, but it doesn't look like it's helping things, because Youri Tielemans doesn't look anywhere near the player that we know he's capable of, and was, in my view, was terrible last night against against Liverpool. And that was 2 years to the day since he lit up Wembley. Like, we're talking about a completely different player, but the same bloke all in the same sentence. And but Dean Smith, going back to your question, I know I've kind of wandered off on a tangent there, but Dean Smith, I think he's a good guy. You can tell that, and he's very respectful and polite. But I wonder whether he thought that it was better than what it was when he arrived. He said in his first press conference after he watched the Bournemouth game, he was a bit 50-50 as to whether he was coming. He said it in jest, and it was a joke, and everyone in the media room laughed because it was funny. But actually, when you look, I wonder whether he looks back on it now and actually thinks, should I just have left Jesse Marsh to come in and wonder about? But yeah, it's a really difficult one because, I mean, depends who you talk to. I mean, Villa fans still love him. Norwich fans hate him. Brentford fans and Warsaw fans think he's okay. So that there is a reputation there of a half-decent manager. But I just wonder whether this was just too late, whether this ship was already gone.
Yeah, no, I suspect it will. I've mentioned the national media already. That, you know, people are now starting to talk about it. And I've seen, you know, lots of criticism towards the players, rightly so. Lots of criticism towards Brendan Rodgers, again, rightly so. But one thing that's been clearly missing in terms of the criticism that all of us pick up on is the lack of criticism towards the ownership and the board. Have you, as a radio station, asked to speak to people like John Rudkin or even the owner to kind of get answers and get interviews? And if so, what's been said back?
I personally asked the football club earlier this season whether someone from board level, someone like John Rudkin or Susan Whelan or Andrew Neville, you know, the guys who mainly look after the football inside of the business rather than people like the director of strategy or something or marketing. But I asked the club whether they would like to come on and kind of set the record straight. I believe it was shortly after the defeat away to Nottingham Forest when the banners started coming out asking for action from the board. And the club declined politely the opportunity to come on. But it is definitely something that we'll be continuing to ask the question, because I think it's right, you know, that because Dean Smith can't really comment on, you know, the running of the club. He's spoken openly about not really actually knowing. He's not even looked at the kind of contract situation at the players, because he wants to take them on a case by case basis and how they feel. And I think someone like Charla Soyuncu is one end of the spectrum, and someone like Yuri Tillemans is the other end of that spectrum as to who wants it and who wants to come in and fight, certainly on what we saw against Liverpool. We'll continue to ask that question, because I think, you know, fans deserve a level of answer as to why they think it's gone wrong more than anything. Because I would be really interested to hear why people like John Rudkin and Susan Whelan believe this has gone wrong, or where they believe they made the right decision or made the wrong decision, trying to understand the kind of running of the football club and what we've seen this season.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, they're unlikely anyway to do that during the season. It will be interesting to see at the end of the season if that fate is sealed, if anyone from the club does actually come out, because I do think that the fans do deserve answers. I do genuinely. Jordan, do we have an update from your game? Has there been a goal?
There's been a goal, Jeff.
Did you see it?
Of course not. I mean, some things don't change even at local football, Jake. I think Jake Smith has equalised for Atho. That was a big roar behind the goal. So 1-1. Good. Up the Atho.
George, what I want to ask you is, because of course you were there last night, lots of people left. And again, no problem with that. Can completely understand. I've done it myself plenty of times. If you're not happy with what you're seeing, you paid your money, go do what you want. But also lots of chants and banners directed whether towards the board and the players. And a couple of people messaged me actually saying that they weren't happy with the almost sarcastic chants and booing towards the players, saying that they basically thought it was unhelpful And again, I don't know this because I wasn't there, but apparently James Maddison then kind of almost signaled towards the singing section a sarcastic thumb up at the end. What did you see and what did you make of that? Because me and Jack were at Fulham and there was lots of sarcastic chants again that we've got the ball or we're singing about playing at Ipswich or Plymouth. Honestly, I found that funny and I'm absolutely okay with it, you know, because we're the ones that are actually going to have to go to Ipswich and Plymouth next season. And if we're trying to find some kind of crumb of comfort and fun within the misery that is following this football club up and down the country, then we're well within our rights to do that. But what did you make of the atmosphere inside the King Power and some of those sarcastic chants aimed towards the players yesterday?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one because, like you say, you pay your money and you take your choice. Where I sort of stand on the sarcastic chanting, I thought it was funny at Fulham. I didn't think it was funny last night. I think the joke's worn off pretty quickly that we're going to be relegated playing Plymouth Argyle. I don't really find that amusing anymore. And it angers me a little bit that, I mean, it should anger the players as much as it angers other people. Your own fans are literally taking the piss out of you at your home ground. The booing, I think, to be honest, I don't think it's been enough. I think there needs to be more of it after the game, not during the game necessarily. But when you're 3-0 down after an hour in a game that you're supposed to be fighting for your life, I mean, half the ground was empty. I mean, if we're down before West Ham, the attendance could be laughable. And I thought I saw Maddison signal towards the cop end. There was a guy I spoke to after said he felt like it was directed at him because he was booing him. And I just think, again, we've been through this with Maddison. Just wind your neck in, mate. I like Maddison as a player. I do understand the argument of, you know, we want players to speak out and not be media trained. But there's also, you've got the other side of the coin where you've got to be aware of your situation. I mean, you're clearly lining up another move. Like Owen mentioned Tielemans, there was a tweet from Romano earlier saying Tielemans is fully focused on, you know, keeping Leicester City up. But he's looking at his options in the summer. And you think, well, how can
it's
you...
It's like his agent had written it.
I mean, if you look abroad, and I know it's the culture is never, ever going to be the same. And Leicester, I think our fans, by and large, are pretty pathetic, to be honest. Obviously, you've got quite a few thousand hardcore element, but it's, you know, it's hardly the Bombonera, to give an example. But they wouldn't put up with what's going on at the football club in abroad, certainly. You've seen Milan the other week, who lost to, you know, last week, I think they lost to Spezia.
Yeah,
the fucking fans. The players are going over to the fans and apologising and listening to what the fans are saying. And then the fans are there today at the training ground sending the players off. And it's like, you know, it's not brushed under the carpet, but it's like that's how that culture is. And if the fans aren't happy, that's who you answer to. And don't, you know, don't get it wrong. The players, when it comes to a football club, are at the bottom of the chain. The fans are at the top. And to be honest, I think West Ham could be fascinating. Like I said, it could hardly be anyone there. There could just be boos ringing around. But I don't think it's vociferous enough. I think, to be honest, we mentioned it last week. It's almost like we dared question what was going wrong. And the fans were out of order for questioning what was going wrong. And Rob Tanner was out of order for writing what he wrote. And it's just this really sorry state of affairs. I think, you know, going back, I'm not going to go over whose fault is it, the board or the managers or whatever, but the players have got away with quite a lot, I think. And, you know, none of them are going to be here next year. You know, I'd take like the three lads that came through the academy as an example. That should be really hurting them. You know, this is a club that gave you your opportunity to play in the Premier League, play for your hometown club. All five of us on this phone call would do anything for that. And we're going down. And I mean, to have that as a player on your CV for a start, where's the professional pride that you sent, like Owen said, the most expensively assembled squad with the highest wage bill down? Where's the professional pride? I just don't see it. And I think they've got away with it. I think our fans have every right to make their feelings known.
Yeah. One interview we've not mentioned was the Harvey Barnes one. And he spoke during the week. I can see Jack smiling already. It'll be interesting to get your take on this, Jack. But Harvey was talking about the fact that, You know, they obviously they're going to do all they could to try keep Leicester up this season, and was hoping that, you know, it would be a, almost like a bad way to leave if they did get relegated. And I couldn't help but just think, hang on, Harvey, you're not out of contract in the summer, mate. You've still got time left on your deal. Who says you're leaving? You know, what we would like to see here is Harvey to come out and say, look, I've got X amount of years on my contract. You know, I'd be heartbroken to see this club go down. You know, if the club want to keep me, I'm going to do all I can to kind of bring it back to the Premier League. And I just thought it was like, and I know it was only a snippet of a kind of a longer part of the interview. And he was alluding to quite a few of the players who are out of contract. But just within that, I was just thinking, and I'm taking those quotes and also combining that with what I see from him on the football pitch as well. And I don't see that hurt from him. And I know he's a bit of an introvert, isn't he, Harvey, anyway? So, you know, I'm conscious of being even more unfair on him because he has come in for quite a lot of criticism on this podcast. And when you consider he is our top goal scorer, he is an incredibly interesting case. And he has had so much airtime on this podcast. But I just thought that's not what I want to hear from Harvey Barnes. And then you listened in contrast to Jamie Vardy's interview, you know, somebody who hasn't come through the youth system, but you could see how much, Owen, that it was hurting Jamie Vardy. And I was watching Johnny Evans do his interview. I'm listening to Harvey Barnes and, you know, what Jack's just mentioned about their Youri Tielemans. You know, it's no wonder whatsoever we are where we are when you've got so many players actively looking to leave the football club. And I think you can count on one hand probably the amount of people genuinely hurting and the amount of people who genuinely want to be here next season to try help things out. I think the likes of Harvey Barnes, they want out, and they want out as soon as they can.
Well, I've just checked. Harvey Barnes is under contract till 2025. So that would be not the end of next season, but the season after. So he's still got 2 years and a little bit left on his deal, which is interesting. Like you say, the context is key. I didn't hear the whole interview that Harvey Barnes did, but that snippet that's taken and the quotes that are taken does, without context, allow you to look in a slightly different way. The contract situation has been brought up all season, hasn't it? I do think there's a serious problem there. The fact that there is 8 out of contract this summer, if you include Tete, whose loan will be up and will head back to Shakhtar, followed by I think another 7 the season after as well.
Yeah,
you're talking about most of the squad who are out of contract over the next couple of years, and that's never indicative to a side that wants to stay in the Premier League. But it's very interesting where I stand after games and stuff. Waiting for Dean Smith and then waiting to speak to players should they want to stop to me if I ask. You do see, I mean, at Fulham is the best description. It's the kind of mix zone, which is called, is behind these big white gates next to the cottage, within 10 yards of the cottage or so. And they open one of the gates and you see the players for a second or so, but on the ledge right next to the stairs, Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall and Luke Thomas were stood there after the Fulham game. And both of those lads looked distraught. Kiernan was sat there, head in his hands. Luke looked like he wanted to be anywhere but stood waiting for the rest of his teammates to come out of the changing room. And they both looked genuinely heartbroken of what they'd seen. And they were both subs who came on in that game. And I remember Pipe saying in commentary and afterwards and in the shows that kind of followed that they're the sort of lads you've got to throw in the team now because they're the lads that it means most to. And I think particularly Kiernan is quite an emotional guy. I think you see it on his face and he wears his heart on his sleeve and Harvey Barnes isn't like that. I don't think that anyone goes out and just consciously throws the towel in, but it's the subconscious that concerns me and the contracts running out at this season and next season and the uncertainty of Premier League football or Championship football or whatever it is just really damaging right now.
Yeah, I mean, just then quickly on some of them players then. Oh, are you surprised that then Dean has stayed so loyal to a certain number of those players? You know, the likes of Soumaré and Tielemans, you know, and Wout Fez, because they haven't played particularly well. And you've got someone like Harry Suter who actually came in and showed something, I thought. Papi Mendy, I thought, was doing okay. You're talking about what it means to Kean and Dewsbury Hall. It seems very, very quickly Dean Smith made his mind up about players he liked and he didn't like, which is fine. All managers do that. But at the same time, Vout, Booba and, you know, God knows who else, they haven't exactly rewarded him with any kind of level of performance, have they? You know, they haven't shown and indicated they care more than the other players. I think that people like Dewsbury Hall and Suter, et cetera, because they're going to be here at the club next season, aren't they? It's surely going to mean more to them. I'm just surprised they haven't had any look in really at all.
The Kean and Dewsbury Hall one baffles me.
He's not had a look in at all, is he?
Yeah, well, I've said this all season and people think it's because I've got a Shepshed Loughborough love in with him. And you know, part of that is true. You know, I love the kid. He's a really nice guy. But I also remain steadfast in the opinion that the moment you take Kean and Dewsbury Hall out of the midfield, the absolute backside of the whole midfield completely falls out and the engine of the team completely falls out.
Yeah.
Yes, his on-the-ball technical ability needs a bit of help. Sometimes he does give the ball away looking for a pass that was maybe a little bit too adventurous. Sometimes his first touch lets him down. But at this stage of the season, I can forgive that for a lad that runs and tackles and kicks people and does the dark arts and gets in the faces of players like Jordan Henderson rather than letting them just take the time on the ball to spin and go. And someone who, if there is a last-ditch tackle or a last-ditch block that he's got to throw himself in for, knowing he's going to get a boot in the face, he would do it. Just like any of us would do it, really.
Yeah.
And I can't get my head around why he's not been in the team. And so that one really confuses me. But as for the other players, I mean, clearly Dean Smith wanted Wout Faas and Soyun Chu to be the aggressive central defensive partnership. And, you know, Johnny Evans was injured at the time. Daniel Amati just probably isn't at the level. Well, there's no probably about it. He's not a Premier League starting. You know, if you want to bring him in 4, 5, 6 games a season, he'll do you a job and that's fine. But as a consistent Premier League starter, he's probably not got the quality there. And then Suter coming in the summer, in January, and signing a big old deal. You know, it is interesting that Dean Smith has looked at certain players and not looked at other players really. But one stat I would give to back up my Kean and Dewsbury Hall point is that before Dean Smith came in, every Premier League game that Leicester won this season, Dewsbury Hall started in. And I know he started in an awful lot of the games that they lost as well. But the only game that they've won in the Premier League this season that he didn't start in was the Wolves game, and he came on at half time and changed it. And that to me is more than enough reason, plus the running, plus everything else, to stick him in.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I know others don't, but you know what he lacks in other areas, he brings so much more because the other people in those positions, his qualities are the things that those people lack, which I think is why he has always been incredibly important to us, more so that maybe people realise that now are maybe starting to slowly realise, but probably all a little bit too late. Rick, what did you make of that then as well, in terms of those selections and the players that Dean's been really loyal to? I was flabbergasted when I saw that midfield lineup being the same as what it was for Fulham, when you consider the absolute horror show that we had to watch, you know, and everyone, it was clear to see to everyone that there was just no press in the central area of that pitch. And then he went and played against Liverpool, a team flying, who are so good in those areas, with the exact same midfield combination. It, for me, was just suicidal. It's kamikaze.
Yeah, it was horrible to see. I know we haven't got that many options. Owen's just made some very good points about Dewsbury Hall. I think, okay, this season's not been quite as good as last, some way off, but he's the only one in our team that can press. And Dean Smith's team, renowned for pressing, so it's really surprised me that Dewsbury Hall hasn't been playing. Whether he's been carrying injuries, I don't know. I know he was out last night. But Mendy, I just don't see how Mendy's barely played under Smith, because Samare's gone off the boil since he had played well against Wolves and Leeds, but since then he's been the Samare we've seen for over 18 months now. And Ndidi, like last night, and Ndidi just breathtaking. There was one bit before we'd even gone 1-0 down, and you could see that the tide was turning. Our opening 10, 15 minutes where we seemed a bit more engaged. We were dropping off, and he just sauntered back. The ball just went past him, and he just wasn't busting a gut. Him and Samare both doing it, and Tielemans was even further behind because he just can't run. This is where I'm now getting frustrated with Smith, because I was quite positive him coming in, because what else could you be? We were clinging on in the hope that he would at least evoke some form of improvement. But I don't think he's helped himself with the team selections. They've either been so wacky that it worked at Wolves, or where you think, okay, there's logic in some of what you're doing there. You've not picked the right personnel in those systems. Soutar, for me, did nothing wrong under Rodgers. And you know, the one game I just couldn't comprehend why he didn't play was Everton. I think Suter's aerial dual percentage wins is 84%, the best in the league. I know it's only a short snapshot of games since he's come here, but that's evidently his strength. And against Everton, you know, Calvert-Lewin bullied Fass. He was, Soyuncu still had a relatively good game against Everton within reason, but Fass had a horrible game. And why Suter didn't play there? He's not changed it enough for me in certain areas. And I know he might want a settled team where possible, but we're playing badly. So you've got to make those changes. So yeah, I was not happy with who he picked yesterday. And I don't know whether they are all injured from the ones that didn't play. It was hard to ascertain what had happened last night, because he said in his press conference on Friday that there was no other injuries. So how we managed to get three injuries from Friday to Monday is a new one for me. Even that, I mean, Brendan would be proud of that under his terrible record. But
I do find with Vout, I think he is an incredibly difficult person to play alongside. I think if you're a good central defender, it's hard to look good playing against him. Even if Vout plays well, it's because he's just chaos. He just goes where he wants, and you know, I put some screenshots in the group chat the other day of some indications where, you know, Leicester play a line, and it's quite a high line, but playing a line where it's deep or high only works if you're all playing the same line, where Vout is just a magnet to the ball, and he gets drawn into midfield into areas where he doesn't need to be, or he goes with runners he doesn't need to go with. And the amount of times that has resulted in the defensive line just being all over the place, I mean, you know, it's becoming more and more apparent with each game that goes. And on Ndidi quickly, this was a Jordan Blackwell stat from yesterday before last night. So this is what Jordan tweeted. He said, Ndidi, by the way, has not made a single tackle in his last three starts. There was only one Premier League game in the five seasons before this one where he failed to make a tackle. And I kind of quote tweeted that one as, has there been, you know, a bigger drop off of any Leicester player than Wilfred Ndidi? When you consider there's been lots of players with huge drop offs. At one point, Wilfred Ndidi was genuinely one of the best disruptive defensive midfielders in the Premier League. Only N'Golo Kante kind of challenged him in terms of those tackles and interception stats in the Premier League. He was about a country mile one of the best, if not the best, in the Premier League. And now he's just a shadow of his former self. And I know, I'm aware he came out of the team at one point with personal problems, and we're not entirely sure of what they were or how much they have affected him. And I know he has had injuries, and then Brendan made him play the centre-half for a little bit. We don't know how much of a factor all of these things are, but it's just, it baffles me. And I don't know who to blame, whether it is a Rodgers thing, whether it's a personal thing. I really don't know. Jack, you can pick up from that if you want, but I know you also want to mention as well the pre-season tour, which we haven't announced, but the teams who we're playing have announced, which is about a week before the championship. Oh, actually, it's less than a week before the championship.
They did announce it, Jake.
Oh, they have. They done it, have they?
Yeah, okay. It was dug very deep into the website. Very deep.
It was announced at 4 a.m. in Singapore or Thailand or whatever.
Apparently. See, I thought that we had agreed to this months ago because they didn't think they were going to get relegated. But I would have thought that now, in the current situation, they would have asked Spurs and Liverpool to maybe just hold fire a second. You might need some new opponents because we now might not be available for these games. You'd think.
You'd think that, Jake. But apparently, Emil Heskey was out doing a launch for it. So, so full steam ahead. 6 days before the start of the championship season, and you know we're going to play on a Friday night. I mean, that's absolutely given, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we don't play on a Friday night, I'll be surprised. I mean,
what do you say?
I will go back to that, but I just want to pick up on 2 points before I do that. So I think, firstly, I've been a really big critic of Dewsbury Hall. I completely agree with everything you said. I think he has lots of deficiencies in his game. He runs more than anyone else. He really cares about the club. And actually, maybe I've been a little bit harsher on him at times. He genuinely does care. I think he probably has taken this to heart. So, and he's one that I think playing in the championship for a year might do him the world of good. Well, Fez, I wanted to draw a comparison actually with him as a defender when you describe him as chaos. The player that came to my mind was Iheanacho, in the sense that Iheanacho 1 minute does something outrageously brilliant, followed by something unbelievably shit. And it's the same with Fez, except those are not qualities that you would look for in a centre-half.
I was going to say, it's a big difference there.
But that's sort of the player I see. And the point you made, it must be so hard to play against him because you have no idea what he's going to do next. I mean, he looks a bit mad and he plays mad. And, you know, for six games, he looked unbelievable. And the Liverpool game obviously really probably knocked his confidence. Again, seems like a good lad. Seems like he cares. Whether he'll be here next season or not, I don't know. You question whether he'd really fancy that. And there does seem to be, there are reports that the Belgians are a bit of a clique. So I don't want to dig him out too much, but he's been absolutely woeful. And, you know, I completely agree with what Rick said about Suter. I like Suter. I would play Suter. He doesn't have a lot of pace. I think he's a better footballer than them and wins headers. And that counts for a lot. But to go back to the pre-season tour, I don't want to dig the club out too much for this sort of thing, because one of the challenges has been we don't make enough money commercially, which means we can't spend that much money. So on the one hand, I kind of applaud the fact that we're playing the game everyone else plays in the Premier League, because we have to abide by financial fair play. At the same time, it sickens me to kind of say that, because I kind of go back to the point earlier. The fans in the stadium do seem to be a minor inconvenience to sort of the running of the football club and the expansion of the club and commercial revenue abroad and that sort of thing. I hate those things that are coming into the game. I think the timing's dreadful. Someone should have thought about that. There's no good time to announce that, but they probably knew about it a few months ago, or wait until the end of the season. Probably not the morning after you've all but confirmed relegation, and that might not have been led by them, but I think they're a part to that. But also the other thing that really worries me as well, the last time we did a pre-season tour was when we went to the States and we started horrifically. And it's not just one game, I think it's two or three games. So we're going to Thailand. I mean, our players behave brilliantly in Thailand as well. I'm sure there are absolutely no distractions for them. And the other thing, again, I really, really hope there's a plan for this somewhere, but the amount of change that is going to need to happen at the football club is enormous, and we don't seem to be able to do any business quickly. And the 2 months or whatever it is, the 6 weeks, because we lose a week with the championship as well, which is another thing the club won't account for. There is so much work to be done, and then they're going off to Thailand. Terrifies me again, because I've got so much mental scarring from the last summer, and we can't, you know, like the club can't let this summer slip. We've got two seasons once we go down with the parachute payments. Then our revenue goes even smaller. Your best chance is going up in the first two seasons. They've got to be spot on. And it's not a great start, let's put it that way.
No, it's not. Right, shall we change kind of pace and feel to the podcast and have a game of Who Are You? Because we've got Owen still with us as well. Jordan has, by the way, left to go back to that game. But should we do that?
Yeah, let's play.
Let's do it.
I just need to find the music.
Do you want me to do it? Because I'm now back on the laptop, Jack.
Yes, please, mate, because I can't find it.
Right, here we go.
Who is your daddy? And what does it do?
Who are you?
You.
No, not me, you.
Yes, I am you.
Just answer the damn questions. Who are you?
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Yeah, no, I was having some connection issues earlier on, but we're back up and running. Not sure why, not sure how, but don't ask questions. It's working. Owen, long-time listener, first-time appearance on Who Are You? How do you tend to do at these, mate?
I think over the... a very mixed bag, if I'm honest. Sometimes it's like, yes, and then other times I'm going, I ain't got a foggiest. So yeah. Hopefully I don't embarrass myself is the hope.
You are a bit younger than us, though, Owen, aren't you? You're the other side of 30, so...
Yeah, I'm 26, so... Yeah.
Extenuating circumstances, right. Though.
Yeah, no, it is definitely for sure. Well, I'm Quizmaster today, and I'm intrigued by this one because I'm not sure if it's really easy or really hard. But luckily, Owen, it is an era where you should be okay. I haven't gone too far back. So yeah, I'll be honest. Initially, the first few clues, I'm not going to give too much away because I've got a feeling that it might be a little bit easier than some weeks. But you know, why not? It can't be really tough every week, can it? So as always, we go in with the age first of all. I was born on the 16th of December, 1981, which makes me 41 years old. Okay. Now, interestingly, this was a player blighted with injury. And the last time he played in kind of top level English football was back in 2009. So if you do the math.
Lee Morris.
It's not Lee Morris.
Matt Jones.
It's not Matt Jones. So to then kind of help you out a little bit, I played for Leicester City between the years of 2004 and 2007. And I played a fair amount, 78 times.
Oh, no.
Is that too late for Jordan Stewart?
It's not Jordan Stewart. Although, next clue.
I'm Matt Piper.
Williams.
Matt Piper.
No, but Rick has got it. Gareth Williams.
Come on.
Wow.
He's so good.
He has lovely hair.
He did have beautiful hair. Some of the other clues for Gareth Williams, because I, of course, wanted to ignore and avoid the Nottingham Forest link there. But I remember at the time him signing on a free transfer. Well, the contract had expired, but we ended up having to pay quite a lot of money through the tribunal, which was like nearly a million quid. And I remember at the time Forest wanted about £4 million for him, which is why it went to the tribunal. You know, it was a really kind of highly rated midfielder, wasn't he? Never really hit the heights. Did have lots of injury problems, but yeah, had wonderful hair. Was a rangy midfielder. Yeah,
Watford
went to Watford.
Yeah.
Played three times, mate, and then as good as retired.
So he'd
slot right in.
Yeah,
in the current midfield, wouldn't he? Couldn't press.
Yeah,
very lackadaisical.
He was. I thought he was a good player. I liked.
Yeah, he was, but he again, it was fancy during, it, would he?
It was during
this.
That era.
He replaced.
It was during that era, wasn't it? It was very, very difficult for him. And as I said, you know, and coming from Forest as well, in some ways, you're starting on the back foot, aren't you? You're going to have to be really, really good, really quickly to win people over. And he never quite really managed it, did he?
No.
But
I've won again, then.
Once again, Rick wins. Other clues were that his middle name is Glyn. And the reason I thought that was interesting was, A, because I like middle names, and we do this lots in the group chat. But he's got that's a Welsh middle name, but he played for Scotland, didn't he? So I was trying to try throw you by giving me.
He was actually Scottish as well. He wasn't one of those championship players with a.
Yeah, he was born Glasgow.
Yeah.
But with the middle name of Glyn. But yeah, congratulations, Rick. You are the winner once again. No real surprise there.
Can I just ask Rick what his favourite middle name is? Before
yes, of course you can.
Yeah, well, I mentioned this, didn't I? And he listens to the podcast. It's one of my good friends who's a big Blackpool fan. His middle name is Redvers. Redvers. Simon Redvers Muggleton. What a name. What a man.
That's a strong name, isn't it? Redvers Muggleton. Have you got a favourite middle name, Owen? Owen, what's your middle name? Because you already got a double-barreled surname.
This used to be a good one. This used to be a thing, didn't it?
Sat here quietly, hoping this wouldn't get brought up. Mine are ridiculous. I mean, if you see my first name before, it's very, very clear that my mum was still on gas and air when she named me. I actually have two middle names.
So you've got five names?
Yeah.
Come on then. Come on.
Five names for a lad from Shelthorpe. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. So my middle names are
Owen Henley Patrick Palmer Atkin.
Yeah.
Strong back five, that, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it?
That'd keep us up if you were playing across the back five.
Like a Mike Bassett 11.
Yeah. I'm really not looking forward to that being put out all over Twitter, if I'm honest, but there you go.
Yeah. You didn't want to share that at all, did you?
say again, Jack.
That used to get referenced, didn't it, a while back?
Yeah, yeah. So Tom Meehan found out one of my middle names was Patrick and thought it was funny because of Patrick Owen or something like that, and then decided he was going to call me Patrick from there on in, and still does to this day. He texted me the other day and referred to me as Patrick, so there we go.
One of the luxuries, Owen, of having you on the podcast, is because, you know, we're kind of regularly on your one over on BBC Radio Leicester, and we've known each other now for quite a while, and it's nice, isn't it, to look back at the better times. And a time, Owen, that is regularly discussed on this podcast is the Eindhoven trip. So it was a good one, wasn't it? And I regularly talk about it, and there's many memories of myself and Jordan who were out there at the time with you, Pipes and Jack. I can't remember the names of the bars. And also I remember one of the most surreal moments in my life when we're in the square in Eindhoven before the game, where it was myself, you and Pussy Man Dan just in the square having a chat. One of the most surreal experiences of my life, but I just feels like a nice opportunity to talk about some happier times.
Yeah, no, that Eindhoven trip was one of my favorites from last season. And yeah, it was, you know, that square was amazing. I was seeing people in there that I've not seen for years. I was seeing regular faces. Like you, I saw you speaking with Pussy Man Dan as well. You know, it was a weird concoction of people, but it works. And then and then just throw Top into it as well. I mean, when he walked through and came in, and that for me was a stroke of genius, Top coming down there, and I think it really got the fans on side and just gave everyone a bit of a lift. And yeah, I mean, the game was amazing, and Ricardo's goal will stick with me forever, but the bumping into you in a misty dark bar was up there with one of the best experiences of my life. I thought, oh my god, Jake Watson's gonna come and chat me up here, this is amazing.
Well, look, mate, if you play your cards right, we could do this all over again in places like Plymouth and in Ipswich and Rotherham next season. How does that sound? Because it's going to be no, in all seriousness, it's, you know, for you then coming into the job that you've been doing for a while now, it's been Premier League, you know, European football, you know, it's been the good times, hasn't it? You've been so lucky. Now we're going to head into an era where, you know, not even being negative here, it's just going to be different. You know, all these grounds, and I'm obviously going on the presumption we are going to be playing Championship football. But is there part of you that's thinking, okay, that's going to be quite interesting, be a little bit different next season?
Maybe in the summer. I think
I'm going maybe, ahead of myself, aren't I?
Yeah, maybe in the summer that may kick in, or as the new season gets close. This is if Leicester do get relegated, I think that might kick in, because, you know, whether they're in the Premier League or the Championship or whatever division they're playing in, wherever they're going to go, you know, they're going to be supported and they're going to be followed by people like us, regardless of what division. You know, we're not we're not here for fair weather. You know, we've been subjected to this horrible life, and we'll continue to live it on the Leicester City roller coaster. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of grounds in there that I think fans, those hardcore fans will enjoy going to. I'm not particularly, I mean, the some of the press boxes in the Premier League are terrible. So, God heavens, what awaits in the Championship? We'll have to wait and see. My knees are often numb, and my ankles with pins and needles in them in Premier League ones, and Parks is the same. He can barely move. So, no, I think it will be a bit of an adventure, but it will only be enjoyed, obviously, if Leicester do well. And, you know, if it's like a similar kind of vein to like that League One season when it was doom and gloom and terrible, but actually Leicester went and rebuilt really well. They were able to get on a run of games. They made some great memories in stadiums that ordinarily they would never have been to because they'd never been in that division. Then maybe that they'll be, you know, it'll be a good season. But as you guys have already mentioned earlier on, there's a hell of a lot of rebuilding to do, not just the manager, but maybe you're talking upwards of 10, maybe 15, maybe even getting towards 20 players coming through the door and leaving. It's a big turnover, and you have to get it dead on. Otherwise, you risk falling into obscurity for another few years. And it does make me wonder that if Leicester and haven't been able to sustain 10 years in the Premier League now with the title, the Community Shield, the FA Cup, the European trips, then when can they?
Jack, now I know that you've kind of got your head around this for quite a while now, haven't you, in terms of the positives of dropping down into the Championship. And again, I apologise to people who are still kind of holding on to some kind of hope that we do stay up. But, you know, I am at that point now where I actually do think it is for the best that we go down. And I am at that point now where I'm thinking, oh, I'll get to go back to Norwich next season, or, you know, go to Ipswich. I haven't been there in ages. You know, I do fancy a trip to Plymouth and to Rotherham. I genuinely do. And again, I'll probably surprise quite a few people how upbeat I am being right now, but I do want this season to be over, and I do want it to start all over again. And I am now thinking about the positives of Championship football. And as Owen alludes to, that League One season at the time, I remember sat there when we drew with Stoke and got relegated, and it was one of the worst days of my life. I was sat there all on my own because nobody would go to the game with me, and I couldn't get there. So I just sat there on my own watching it. But in the end, that League One season was the beginning of something brilliant. And we all enjoyed that. It was a new experience. And, you know, who knows if this is going to be the start point for something positive or the beginning of, you know, a difficult few seasons. It feels like it's probably going to go, you know, one of either way there. But where are you at with it now? Are you at a similar place to me?
I feel like I've been there a while, mate. It's Leicester City. It won't be boring. I mean, call me a simpleton, but football for me is about moments. It's about celebrating an away win in the last minute. It's about, you know, seeing your team score, you know, 30-yard screamers or whatever. And you can still do those things in the Championship. We've had an unbelievable run. And the last 7 years have... And I don't want to get too sentimental and go, we've had the last 7 years, so we've got to accept what we've got. But it is through thick and thin. And... You know, I funny enough, I remembered our away record, and our away record last year was absolutely bang average. So the number of games I've seen us win away from home are few and far between. And actually, the thought of going down to the Championship, going to some tin pot grounds and maybe seeing us bag a last minute winner, I'm dead excited about, amongst all my anxiety and fear of what, you know, what the summer's got to hold. So I mean, I've probably been there since about March, which will be irritating for a lot of people. But yeah, I mean, it's still football at the end of the day. We might see our team win a few more games and, you know, there might be a few more things to smile about. It's not going to be the Premier League. It's not going to be the glitz and glamour in terms of that. But it's still Leicester. The shirt's still blue. It will be the same faces in the crowd. And that's enough for me.
Yeah, and I do keep saying that to people that, you know, the league in which you play in is fluid. You can go up, you can go down. Football doesn't end at the end of this season. If you get relegated over a bad season, you've got an opportunity next season to rectify it. The things that never go away are things like the cups, you know, that we've won, and some of the trips that we've had in Europe. Those things never go away, and we have been incredibly fortunate. That's where I'm at.
I mean, it's been a terrible season. And one that looks like it's probably going to be over soon. But I love the kind of romantic, poetic way that Jack kind of summed that up there, as, you know, the shirt will still be blue and it was still going to be the same fans, and it will be, you know, the best training ground in the Championship. And actually, one thing that, I mean, it is terrible, and there is going to be a massive rebuild job in the summer, and it's, yeah, you know, it is concerning times when you consider the finances. And we had Kieran Maguire on the podcast the other week, and he was talking about they're going to lose up to, if they do go down, 2/3 of their income. And, you know, they've got bank loans against Premier League TV money. It's all very scary. But actually, the League One relegation allowed the club to push the reset button and look at who needed to leave and who needed to come in. And perhaps that is what this club needs at the moment. And it perhaps it does need that reset button changed and pushed, so that this group of players that have been so successful are able to move on and are able to go and ply their trade elsewhere. And you can bring in a new breed of players. And I think, you know what, the last 10 years have been absolutely unprecedented for Leicester. No one expected them to be there, and the club probably didn't expect themselves to be there. And they will have learned a lot of lessons along the way. And it's really important that amongst all this chaos and worry and anxiety, that they learn the lessons of what's happened this season and what has led to this, so that if and when Leicester City, if and when they do get relegated, get promoted back to the Premier League, then they can build on this. And I don't think Kuntop's going to be going anywhere soon, and he's the guy at the top. So hopefully, you know, they learn their lessons and keep them in place for next time.
Right, I'm back again. I think you've got double Jake on the YouTube channel at the moment. Having a nightmare. I'm not sure how much you heard of the last 5 minutes from me waffling on, but Jack, is there anything you want to add, mate, before we finish up?
No, I'm not sure I can add to that, but yeah, it's been good spending time with you. I feel like I've got last night out of my system, although I was only there for 45, so good seeing you all.
And that is where we'll leave it. Owen, Henry, Patrick, Palmer Atkin, you're a top bloke. We've done a wonderful job this year. And we really do appreciate you coming on and giving up your evening, because we know we've kept you a long, long time. And yeah, mate, it's massively appreciated. It genuinely is.
No, thank you very much for having me. And I have to say, like, well done, lads, this season. I mean, the Big Strong Leicester Boys has been a very good antidote for me, as someone who does their own podcast and can't listen to it without cringing. You know, it's being able to listen to something else and being able to hear what you guys are thinking has been incredible to listen to. So I think it's brilliant, and it's great to see all this despite the mire of a season that Leicester have found themselves in. It's great to see lots of good content coming out. So well in, lads. Am I a Big Strong Leicester boy now as well? That's what I was going to ask.
Would you like to be one of us? Do you want to be associated?
Can I put it in my Twitter bio?
Mate, I don't know if I qualify yet.
And we still haven't had a swear word out of you either, Owen. Can we have one big, you know, fuck before you go?
Sorry, what?
Oh yeah, I just realised what that sounded like. Owen, would you like to swear?
It's like Eindhoven all over again.
Isn't it? Right. Enough of that. Right. Let's wrap it up, shall we? So Newcastle up next. Great. Can't wait for that. So we'll do the podcast again at same time next week. So we'll record on Tuesday night. It'll be in your ears, ready to listen to on Wednesday. And yeah, playing out this podcast. And once again, whether it was accidental or on purpose or just really quite scarily fitting. This is the Cardigans losing my favourite game. Thank you once again for listening to the Big Strong Leicester Boys. Podcast Network.